Good evening, I'm Christian Esguera, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. President Duterte's pick for his successor withdrew his candidacy earlier today. Christopher Bongo, a first-term senator and the president's longtime assistant, said his body and mind resisted the idea of running for president. So why did he run for president in the first place? In the meantime, we're seeing an election where the ruling party, led by a still popular president, has no standard better. So who stands to benefit from Go's withdrawal and the president's endorsement and the administration resources that will go with it? Be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is political scientist Cleve Arguelles of the Australian National University. Also with us is Professor Aris Arugay of the UP Political Science Department. Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Good evening, Christian.
Magandang gabi po sa ating lahat.
Okay, good evening to both of you. The big news today, of course, was the announcement by Senator Christopher Bongo that he's no longer running for president. A lot of people were not surprised, although there are also those who were still surprised. I'd like to start with Cleve. Why do you think this was the case? He decided to withdraw his candidacy for president. And how does this reflect on the president and also the ruling party?
I think, as you've said, some of us already expected it, but also some of us were quite surprised. But I think if we look back at what they've been doing since the election season started, we can see that they've been trying to test the waters in terms of the possible candidacies that would end up popular for the public. So they've tried Senator Go and VP, the president as the vice president. They've also tried a tandem for the father and daughter to run together. They've also, they've also tried to float the idea of Senator Go running for president and Mayor Sara running as his vice president and vice versa. But I think what we've learned so far, and the numbers would also show that, is that nothing is coming up as popular as Duterte in 2015, 2016. So I think this is them really trying to let go now. Because from what I've learned in my own research, talking to the people who played a role in the 2016 campaign, for example, of President Duterte, they were very concerned about the numbers. They were really watching the polls. So what I've learned from that is that they don't really enter a race, and they wouldn't want to enter a race without really a guarantee that they will win. And so far, that guarantee is not available to Senator Bongo. So I think it makes sense that if they're not sure what the outcome would be in 2022, that they're just withdrawing and putting their bets on someone else.
So this is some sort of a reality check for President Duterte in his choice of candidate. Professor Arugay, what do you think?
Well, it's a expected move if the objective is consolidation of power. And the higher the chances of being able to win in 2022 and possibly have the candidate continue the legacy of the incumbent administration, but also to protect the interests of President Duterte himself, as well as the people who work under him. So the electability or winnability logic works, but also it has something to do, I think, with the fact that Bongo really, by himself, will not be able to carry out the residual Duterte magic or Duterte support that we thought that could be transferred, and many people believe that this transferability was already problematic, given that House Duterte or the Duterte family is divided for the past few weeks with Sara Duterte joining Senator Marcos Jr. With that cleared, there is now an opportunity to really consolidate all the forces and all the resources back to the big tent, which was supposedly the idea in the first place.
Okay, Cleve, you mentioned the idea that this was basically a test. They were testing the waters. mixing and matching, and whoever would gain traction perhaps would be fielded for president and vice president, but it didn't pan out as the president had wanted it. But assuming that this was indeed the case, don't you think they were not really taking the voters seriously?
I wouldn't say that they are not taking the voters seriously by doing this. I think, in fact, what it shows is that they're taking the voters seriously because they're not willing to send out a slate that they know wouldn't be embraced by the public, right? I think you could compare this in a way in other countries, because they have primaries, you know, wherein you try to test different candidates who will run for the political party. In a way, what we've been seeing so far, including the substitution drama and the months before it, the weeks before it, is that the ruling coalition was trying to test each other, like in terms of which candidacy would really best serve the interests of the ruling coalition in terms of their objective and goal of winning the 2022 and securing themselves a seat moving forward after President Duterte's administration. So in a way, you could see that instead of the primaries being played within just the ruling coalition, they're also including the public in the process. Of course, we know that a part of this sort of like selection and drama among the members of the ruling coalition is also done in private, in closed-door meetings. But a part of it is also including the public, right? Trying to test whether, as I said, the public would embrace them. But I think what we could say is that they probably realize by now that although the substitution drama and the long drawn out sort of like campaign for President Duterte's campaign in 2016 worked well for him, that it's not necessarily working this time around. So I think that's one of the things that they couldn't really play or use that card again with the public. The public isn't really buying it this time around. So I think that's what we could say about it.
Okay. Aris, how do you think this would reflect on President Duterte himself? A very popular president, he still has his popularity somehow intact toward the latter end of his presidency. He made it clear that his choice of president was Senator Bongo, and then that choice backed out today. How does this reflect on him?
Well, the original choice wasn't Senator Bongo.
It was supposed to be
Sara Duterte. Yeah. So this plan B really didn't pan out as he would like it to be, as well as the others, basically because there was really no buy-in, not only in the public in general, as you could see from the surveys, but even among the political elites. When you run for president, you need that local network. And while the PDP Laban Cusi wing has thrown its weight on Senator Bongo, that is insufficient because the Duterte coalition is not simply PDP Laban Cusi wing. So we saw that the alienation of the other members of the supposedly Duterte coalition that Duterte headed himself back in 2015 and 2016, there was a change on who calls the shots. And unfortunately, President Duterte found himself not calling the shots. And this is why when I said that it seems like a cartel is forming, unfortunately, Duterte was left out in that cartelization.
Does this somehow reflect on the president in terms of perceived weakness? Because you said there was no buy-in for Senator Bongo for president, but I don't think that can be said of Sara Duterte if he was able to convince Sara Duterte to run for president, because the numbers would bear her out.
Right. Definitely. The plan, in fact, was originally a Duterte-Duterte tandem, if you would remember. But again, they were testing it, but unfortunately, there was also no buy-in. I mean, yes, dynasties have been a permanent feature in Philippine politics, but there are limits to the ability of dynasties to be able to control everything. And this is where you need other dynasties as partners, as alliances. President Duterte was of a mold that even if we're going to form this alliance of dynasties, I will still be at the top and will be calling the shots. Unfortunately, the other dynasties or the other members of his coalition that was formed in 2015, 2016 had other ideas. And they believe that, well, why are you calling the shots now? Why can't we call the shots? Why can't this be more a collective mechanism for concentrating power and not just relying on you deciding on everything.
Okay, Cleve. Yeah. Still, given the president's political capital, given his popularity, his supposed support base, why would he be left out in the grand scheme of things? I mean, what does it say about the president himself?
Yeah, I think we're seeing right now the results of the fact that they played their cards wrong, particularly Senator Go. If we take a long-term view in terms of how Senator Go was able to consolidate his control of the ruling of President Duterte and the people in Malacañang, the show in Malacañang, right? He from 2016 to the present, I think his idea, his gameplay was to wrestle control and to ensure that he is the center, that he has centralized control of the entire administration. And I think he had a rival. We used to have a rival in the administration in the personality of then Cabinet Secretary Leoncio Evasco Jr., who I think because of his idea of building a grassroots network type of sort of like organizations for the supporters of Duterte and to make that a sort of like semi-permanent organizations, if they had those organizations now, they have been more well placed in terms of winning and controlling the 2022 elections. But because it's been pushed out by Senator Bongo and his clique in the administration, now they're left with nothing but just Senator Bongo. So it seems that what I see is that they've been banking on the president's popularity, and I couldn't fault them for that because President Duterte is unusually popular compared to his predecessors at this point in the election period. But it's looking that it isn't enough. It's given that elections aren't just about popularity, but some other things as well. Command votes, election machines, etc. And usually in other cases, you know, when you have populist leaders like President Duterte, the counterpart to the traditional political dynasties and traditional election machines, the counterpart is that you have a grassroots networks of organizations of your supporters, but they don't have that because they didn't give Secretary Evasco a chance to build that, right?
So, okay. Right. Christian, I just want to add that I think basically the Duterte administration squandered their chances because they were still punch drunk with their victory. We know that in 2019, they were able to almost sweep the senatorial slate. They had this Duterte had this huge popularity. They had complete control to all local governments. And they thought that the things will just be business as usual in this coming electoral cycle. But anyone who's really experienced the dynasties that they've invited to their coalition, they've been in politics for decades, in Manila politics, in capital, in the national political arena. Alliance management is very important. So you can't just bank on popularity. You need to ensure that your allies are towing the line and that they continue not to supersede you or to even challenge you for your leadership. And I think this is what is happening. Some members of his coalition doesn't feel that he should be the one that is the first on in line. And we've seen this with how Sara Duterte also has accepted the vice presidential bid and did not run.
Or do you think a big part of this outcome was also the result of the idea or the reality that the president didn't have a strong candidate to begin with? He didn't have a strong candidate that was left to him in Senator Bongo.
Right, right. Well, the thing is, the entire administration machinery is behind, will be behind any presidential anointed candidate. But unfortunately, in this time around, that is not enough because there are other contenders who were part or who are still part of this coalition that is challenging this anointment. Let us remember that Marcos Jr. did not wait for President Duterte's anointment. wherein supposedly political succession, you have a big role of the incumbent president being able to make a case and to show that I'm popular, you transfer everything to this anointed candidate. But we're not seeing this now. We see President Duterte reacting to things that are beyond sometimes even his control. And the optics really are so bad and doesn't really seem to show that the administration was in control, because the mere fact that there was even the prospect of both father and daughter running against one another at some point reveals the chaotic mess that the administration has gotten itself into.
Okay, Cleve. Technically, Senator Bongo, when he filed the COC as a substitute for president, he didn't carry the PDP Laban Party, right? But even then, isn't it basically very unusual, given the popularity again of President Duterte, that he doesn't have his own candidate for president in 2022, or the ruling party doesn't have one?
It is unusual that an administration that is still quite popular to not have their own candidate, right? Because we've seen in the past administrations that regardless of whether the outgoing president, the incumbent president, is popular or not, they still, because of the fact that they have control of the administration resources, of government resources, that could be used during election day, that they still have a very good influence during national elections in terms of like selecting the next presidential candidate of the administration, as well as the candidates for the local chief executive positions. But it seems that that's not happening here, and I think it's also a culmination of the fact that Duterte during his administration also had this sort of like hands-off approach in terms of like managing his really huge ruling coalition, right? I think we don't see him really, from time to time he would intervene, but he wasn't really 100% active in terms of like managing the infighting in the House of Representatives, for example, even in the Senate within his own ruling coalition. And because of that, when he now that he wants to get in and he's bringing his favorite political son into the picture and he's saying that, you know, this should be the one who will, he should be the one, Senator Bongo should represent our ruling coalition, then that isn't working for these people, because he isn't really active to begin with. And I could just imagine, like in terms of like micro dynamics of it, the father's favorite son, you know, I could imagine that the others would be jealous of him and wouldn't necessarily welcome that anointment, right? Because he's been doing the whipping for the administration, right? He's been controlling the access to the president, even for the members of the ruling coalition. So I could imagine that they wouldn't want that the same scenario, the same kind of like arrangement moving to 2022. But the other thing that I want to say is that we were also seeing this. We're also seeing this kind of like problem that the president not having any candidate, and the ruling party not having any candidate for the next elections. It's precisely also because that the ruling coalition is too big, so they could afford to do this. So they have a leeway to sort of like break away from each other, create different factions. So in a way, because the size is not yet optimal, it's not yet the minimum winning size, if you will, then they can introduce factions to these huge winning coalitions.
Aris, in the absence of an official standard bearer for the ruling party, does it also mean that there's no continuity candidate to speak of in any shape or form in 2022?
Yeah, it's looking like that. What you can have perhaps would be partial continuity, but we're not going to see a copy-paste presidency from 2016 to the 2022 administration. But I do think that the remaining candidates will have to place themselves in this spectrum. So you won't have a pure continuity candidate, but you might have a quasi continuity candidate. And at this point now, candidates are going to be some of them, especially those that are whose numbers are not doing very well, they're going to go on full throttle on pragmatism, on what will get them more votes, given our plurality system. So whatever it is that will appeal to certain voting constituencies, they'll do that. So they'll be anti-China, they'll be anti-corruption, you name it, they'll be pro-jobs. This is the time wherein they will appeal to this median voter, wherein they'll have to be, they won't say much that will negatively affect or lessen the votes that they will likely get.
Okay. Funny, because I remember one incumbent senator running for a national position now. He used to defend President Duterte's policy toward China, but lately has been talking about the need to stand up to China. So I think that's one example of what you're talking about, basically pragmatism. Now, at this point, let's talk about the other idea. So who basically stands to benefit among the current candidates for president? Who stands to benefit from the withdrawal of Senator Bongo? Cleve first.
I think when Senator Bongo decided to enter their base, the worry, especially among the supporters of the ruling coalition, is that he might get the 30 votes away from the Marcos Jr. candidacy, and that would mean that the Marcos Jr. candidacy would end up weaker than it is right now. But I think what we're seeing from the numbers is that that's not happening. He wasn't able to really get away, really draw significantly away the 30 votes from Marcos Jr. So the question is, so what would happen to these votes for Senator Bongo? I think it will just go back to Marcos Jr. I think Marcos Jr. made it very clear that he is the successor to the legacies of Duterte. He, in his filing of candidacy, he made it clear that he's going to be continuing the projects and the policies of the current administration, even on the even on the China issue, right? He also said that he's completely in agreement with President Duterte on how his administration is handling the China problem. So I think more or less, Marcos Jr. stands to gain from the consolidation of the ruling coalition votes or supporters. So now that Senator Bongo is out of the picture, then the MAD plus Estrada Alliance, Marcos Arroyo Duterte plus Estrada Alliance, then nothing is really standing on their way, right?
Okay. Aris?
Well, we will have to wait for President Duterte's reactions. While though Senator Bongo has said that he'll likely stay neutral, I highly doubt that, because the president is many things, but he's not neutral on anything. I do think that the probability will, in terms of just how these candidates are being placed, is that the withdrawal of Senator Bongo has erased all confusion between supposedly Team Marcos Jr. and Team Duterte supporters or voters. If you look at social media for the past 2 weeks until today, there's been a lot of confusion, a lot of infighting amongst themselves. They started attacking one another, championing either Marcos Jr. or Duterte. I think we will see that subside, and they all get to have this group hug again, and maybe this ironclad block vote, command vote of the solid North and the solid South is something that I think will happen. And therefore, this should be a clear existential threat to the other candidates, particularly to genuine opposition presidential candidates.
Okay. Cleve, when you mentioned that most likely former Senator Bongbong Marcos would benefit from this withdrawal by Senator Bongo, but don't you think that presupposes a clear endorsement from the president as well? And if that happens, don't you think that would somehow reflect on the president again, that somehow his political statements have been schizophrenic toward former Senator Bongbong Marcos? He had been attacking him, and then all of a sudden there would be an endorsement?
Yeah, I think the most ideal scenario for former Senator Bongbong Marcos is that if President Duterte wouldn't really declare an endorsement for him, like directly outright, then the ideal scenario for him is that for President Duterte to pretend and to appear that he isn't really picking sides and that he isn't really interested on who will win the next year's elections, because that would mean that then Mayor Sara's candidacy and being as his vice president would stand in for the father's endorsement. Of course, we know that isn't the same. But if the father would refuse to play his card, then Mayor Sara's candidacy would stand in for the Duterte family's endorsement. And what we're seeing actually so far is that it's working so far. We see that when Mayor Sara declared her candidacy for vice presidency and stopped the rumor that she might run for president, we saw how high the numbers of Senator Bongbong Marcos went up. So that just means that having them together, them running together, just makes it clear to the eyes of the public that this is a marriage of the Duterte and Marcos kind of like block. And now that Senator Go is out of the picture, and we could expect that we won't hear. The president is kind. The president might surprise us, but we could expect that he would stop talking about Senator Bongbong. Then I think that's just ideal for his candidacy.
At least not to attack Bongbong Marcos.
That
could benefit Senator Bongbong Marcos. Aris, with what has been happening over the past several weeks, wasn't this also a case of the two Dutertes blinking in the face of formidable challenges in the political arena? First, it was Sara Duterte blinking in the face of Bongbong Marcos, and now her own father.
Yeah, it seems to indicate that the Dutertes are no match to some of the more experienced, the more enduring dynasties in the Philippines, even if they're the incumbent dynasty. They're the dynasty in power. But also, I think what really has affected the Duterte administration's moves in the past, and believe it or not, you this might not sound plausible at first, is our democratic political system. The institutions that have been put in place, even if they've been eroded, has somehow limited the ability of President Duterte and the administration to be able to carve and really get their way of things. Our electoral laws, the institutions in the legislature, in the courts, and the threat that they pose to the power of the executive tells you that while the Philippines might have problematic institutions, but hey, they could still pose some limits, even if they've been really damaged in the coming years. So this is something that political scientists like me are bewildered at the moment, because if it in all logic, Duterte should have had his own way of things. And the way that Duterte has been pictured is that he's this populist authoritarian leader, similar to other leaders, that had his way rampaging on our democratic institutions, and yet institutions have a way of coming back and somehow clipping some of the overly ambitious and overly powerful motives of even a powerful president like Duterte.
Was it really the institutions or basically the political dynasties?
Well,
flexing their muscles and somehow overwhelming Duterte.
Right. The dynasties have put in place these institutions for a reason. And this is to perpetuate themselves in power. So you might say that the dynasties might be behind these institutions, but somehow, if you're talking about the remote cause versus the proximate cause is that the institutions are asserting, even if we know that these institutions have been reshaped and heavily influenced by the political dynasties in the country.
Before we take a break, when you talk about institutions, are you basically referring to the political parties on paper?
I'm referring general. I'm even referring to our constitution that Duterte himself wanted to change. At the end, the constitution wins out. The inability of the Duterte administration to even change the rules means that they scrambled at the very end to play by the rules. And then when they played by the rules, they couldn't get what they want.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break after the fact. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After the Fact. I'm Christian Esguera. Still with us is political scientists, Clive Arguelles and Aris Arugay. Okay, at this stage, let's talk about the logical choice for President Duterte to support in the 2022 presidential election. Now that his plan A didn't pan out, his plan B also didn't materialize. Plan A meaning Sara Duterte, plan B meaning Senator Bongo. Clive.
Well, I think the easiest path for him is to support the candidacy of presidential aspirant Bongbong Marcos Jr., but it doesn't guarantee that he will have the same amount of influence, of course, in that administration if ever Marcos Jr. wins in 2022. And because they've also started as an outsider from this coalition, it would also mean that they might not be as an integral part of the coalition to begin with, right? And it would take for him to actually exercise some form of political humility, if you could call it that way, in the way that Mayor Sara did when she decided to run as vice president. And I can't expect for President Duterte to actually take that lightly, to bow down to the Marcoses and say, okay, I'm exiting, and you take the stage now. Hopefully, you will protect me. What's really sure is that there's so much at stake for President Duterte to make sure that he will place his bets correctly, because you know he has a standing investigation at the international level, but it's also sure that cases would be filed against him in our domestic courts, right? So the chances of him being prosecuted, whether domestically or internationally, is really high. Also, because given the amount of human rights violations that he committed during his administration, if he isn't going for the easy choice of just bowing down to the Marcoses, then he could always also place his bet to Mayor Isko Moreno, who's for the longest time since he started his candidacy, was also signaling that he is welcoming not only the support of the Duterte voters, but also potentially the Marcos voters. I think what we're seeing is that he's placing himself as sort of like the middle ground, as the pragmatic centrist. At least that's their attempt, right? That's the attempt of Mayor Isko Moreno's campaign. Yes. Hoping that they would draw the votes of the Marcoses, the Duterte, and some of the moderate opposition and win this election. But the problem with that, I think is that President Duterte placing his bet on Mayor Isko Moreno, of course, that's not a guarantee that Mayor Isko Moreno would also win. And as I said kanina, when we started talking about Senator Bongo's withdrawal of his presidential candidacy, they like playing it safe. They like an assurance. And I think placing their bet on Mayor Isko Moreno is a bit risky. Although if they were able to bring him to Malacañang at sila lang yung laman ng coalition na yon, then it's better than the Marcos coalition, being part of the big Marcos coalition right now.
Okay, we understand the dilemma. No? So Aris, given the context that we know, for instance the ICC complaint filed against President Duterte, and the likely cases that would be filed against him and his enablers after his term ends. Who do you think would be the logical choice for President Duterte to endorse for president in 2022 now?
Right. We forget, or at least one thing has not been mentioned. President Duterte still has to win his Senate race.
Yeah.
So you have this sequence of political interests. So he in his mind, or at least in his set of interests, there's a set of interests protecting him from possible suit because of what has happened or what is happening during this administration. But he's also running for office, and he will still have to campaign, still have to use resources. But apart from that, there's also a stake about legacy, about continuity, and the fact that this is something that his supporters are banking on, that they don't want that things will just end after 2022. So all of those set of interests need to be aligned in a way that will satisfy Duterte and logically the candidate who can best secure those set of interests in a sequential manner, meaning that will, who knows, we might find out that Marcos Jr. is adopting President Duterte as a senatorial candidate. Just like possibly Marcos's Jr. Party will adopt some of the PDP Laban candidates. We might expect that. But apart from that, there must also be these candidates right now, the remaining ones, will have to make tough decisions, some of them tougher than others. Others, it would be like for Vice President Lenny, it would be a non-issue, right? But for the others, they will have to get this balancing act if they wish to get some of the votes that will come out. But at the end, Christian, I think the confusion that President Duterte and the administration has done to the voting public, this confusion of who gets it somehow assumes that voters will just follow. And they're just automatic machines that, okay, you tell us who to vote, Mr. President, and we will do that. I do think that doesn't apply to all. And some voters might be fed up that we're being confused so much. So maybe let us remember, Filipino voters tend to take the presidential vote as a personal vote. Yeah. While there might be other influences, we've seen this in 2016, while a lot of the voters supported the administration ticket, in the end, they still voted for candidates like Mayor Duterte. So I'm thinking that Filipinos might be fed up about this confusion and would want a clear decision that they will have to make for themselves.
Actually, that was the context of my earlier question regarding whether the Dutertes, or President Duterte in particular, was taking voters seriously because of the way he was playing his cards, that somehow this was reflective of promoting their own political interests, aside from, instead of basically considering what the voters need. Anyway, let's talk about this. Earlier today, Mayor Isko Moreno, of course, is also running for president, expressed openness to getting support from anyone in terms of alliances, in terms of support, to be able to win him the presidency. And basically, it's also open to getting the support of President Duterte. Do you think this is likely to happen? And of course, you cannot ignore the resources that are still within the disposal of President Duterte, being the incumbent, right? Even if Bongo is not running.
Well, the idea here is that if President Duterte hypothetically endorses Mayor Isko Moreno, then that sends confusion again, because he himself has criticized, criticized all the remaining candidates at some point. And this somehow causes a lot of cognitive dissonance, especially among voters. It's like, okay, you're telling us bad things about this candidate, and now you're telling me to support this candidate. So I do think that politicians get to dictate a lot of things toward Filipinos and Filipino voters, but I do think there are limits to that. And what we're seeing right now is that this confusing messages coming from the president and the likely confusing messages to follow might not bode well on his on the ability of his popularity to be translated to pure votes. And at the end, this is why I think if you're on the Marcos Jr. Sara Duterte campaign, there is also some calculation on what aspects of President Duterte will you use for your campaign. And you're not going to simply use all of it.
Cleve, what do you think?
I think it's also important to, as Dr. Aris was saying, to talk about how important the endorsement of President Duterte would be to any candidate. Or for example, we're talking about Mayor Isko Moreno, because we can also consider what happened in 2019 elections. And although during that elections, in the midterm elections, we saw how the president's popularity also delivered in terms of like the results of the Senate, but it was also allied and endorsing quite traditional and popular names already. So we couldn't really be assured whether he's just topping it off with this popularity or whether he's the determining factor why the senators won. But if you look at some local races, for example, races headed by Hope Pongnang Pagbabago in some parts in Mindanao, for example, races where President Duterte endorsed local chief executives, what we saw is that his popularity generated mixed results. For some areas like Cebu City, his popularity really helped topple down Mayor Tommy Osmeña's campaign. But in places like Malabon City, for example, regardless of the several threats that he said about the mayor there, it didn't work. Regardless, although the president enjoys popularity in those cities, it doesn't exactly that, it's not necessarily that his endorsement would also translate votes for the candidate that he is endorsing. If there's something, and foreign observers would always tell this about Philippine elections, if there's something that's quite similar for voters and the political class, is that we love our elections, we like exercising our right to vote, and that also means that for voters they could also make their own decisions even though they still support the presidency.
This Marcos Arroyo Duterte, Sara Duterte, not Rodrigo Duterte, and the Estrada Alliance, often that has been described as a juggernaut, basically the power, the strength, the influence of four political dynasties, not just clans, through their political parties, throwing all their resources, their wherewithal, behind the Bongbong Marcos and the Sara Duterte ticket. Is that really a correct characterization of that alliance, or somehow we're just being treated to a surprise at this stage, and that eventually this could wane, that this could end up not as unbeatable as many people are describing that so far, Aris?
Well, in Philippine politics, it's always coalitions of convenience. So at this particular election juncture, it makes sense for all of these dynasties to group together. In fact, this alliance is not new. We've seen this in the 2015-2016 electoral cycle. It's the same dynasties that are operating. However, I think the big difference back then and now is that power seems to be more equated among at least some of the dynasties, with no one dynasty calling the shots. And that tells you, and this is why for me it's not a simple alliance, it's a cartel of co-equals, meaning these dynasties with their own bailiwicks and their ability to deliver votes given the voting blocks of their respective political strongholds somehow offers something on the table. And what is being offered on their table is at par with what the others are offering as well. So this means that at the end, it's not just secondary dynasties getting orders from the top dynasty, but it's really more promiscuous power sharing. And this means that we will not likely see them eat one another or compete with one another at this particular juncture. But as all coalitions of convenience and convergence, temporary convergence of political interests would show, the tie that binds them quickly dissipates as soon as the objective is accomplished.
Okay, but how come the these political clans, despite the issues hounding them, issues of corruption, a plunder conviction, ill-gotten wealth, tax conviction, despite all those issues, of course, they remain formidable as far as many people are concerned. But how come in this side of the political fence, they were able to come together? But on the other hand, the non-Duterte, the non-Marcos forces are basically fractured still, very fragmented. Why is that the case? Cleve?
Well, I think what we are seeing on the side of the non-administration and opposition forces is that up until this point, surprisingly, I think that the goal of what 2022 election is about is still not clear. Although we would like to assume that for many non-administration, anti-Duterte, opposition forces, that the goal is to unseat the incumbent government, it appears that when you look at the conversations these groups are having on social media, for example, so this is just on what I see online among their leaders, it appears that they have different goals. And of course, if these groups have different goals, then it's very challenging for them to come together. The cost of sacrificing one goal and pursuing another organization's goal, that's too high. So, for example, other opposition groups are saying that this is about ensuring that the Duterte family will be out of Malacanang in 2022, and that no further erosion of our democratic norms and institutions would happen, at least at the very least. But others, it's more about policy oriented, that they want to see a complete reversal of what was implemented during the past 5 years of the Duterte administration, for example. So given that they have different goals and they're not really coming from a position of, they're not coming also from a clean slate, these groups, these non-administration groups, you know, if we're talking about left and center parties, the Liberal Party, for example, they have relationships even before this administration. And that's also part of that makes the process also more complex. Okay. This historical animosity between each other as well.
Okay. Christian, if I may offer a simple response to that, if I may, because the administration alliance, this alliance of dynasties, this cartel, the logic is simple. It's power. Unlike the other side, if we can make that dichotomy, they're still questioning who's the opposition and who's really the pure candidate. They're talking about ideals and appropriateness. They're talking about, it should be the pure leader that should lead the country. When we know that in politics, it's all about power. And so therefore the campaign of the one side is progressing because they're now concentrating their efforts on how to get the job done, how to get the votes. While on the other side, it's still about mudslinging, navel gazing, and soul searching on who should be leading the anti-Duterte coalition and who has the legitimacy to do that.
It's quite surprising that side's still saddled by that conversation, that debate. Who is the pure candidate? Who is the real opposition at this stage? Now, given the fragmented non-Duterte, non-Marcos forces, don't you think this is basically another recipe for defeat, if not disaster, in 2022?
Well, the supposedly in game theory, in political science, when you have a looming threat, and we're seeing it now with this dynasty cartel, the reactions are simply of two kinds. One is to balance it, meaning to come up with a united front against it in order to challenge it and hopefully to defeat it. And supposedly that is the logical consequence. But there's also the other reaction, and that is to bandwagon against the formidable force. So we must be able to observe in the coming weeks, in the coming months, that if some of the candidates will not withdraw from the race, that may seem to indicate that they're bandwagoning, because remember, some of these candidates won't have political positions after 2022. And if this formidable ticket will offer them such, then rather than confront the enemy, they'll just bandwagon and stand behind this formidable threat.
If you can't beat them, join them, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Professor Ari Sarugay and Professor Clive Arguelles, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us tonight on the program.
Thank you.
Before we go, here's how social media users reacted to Senator Christopher Goss' move to bow out of the 2022 presidential race. Some users photoshopped his billboards to reflect the change as they edited his name from Bongo to Bong Gun. Others are trying to salvage his commercial with President Duterte by coming up with parodies of it. Several netizens are also seemingly unfazed by Goss' move, even as they note that it could spell trouble for the opposition. And finally, some say the political intramurals ahead of the elections are really giving soap operas a run for their money. So that's it for tonight. This has been your host, Christian Esguera. You can watch this episode again on I Want TFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now, for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel. Catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow, After the Fact.